Welcome to the Nerd Party.
Hello, I'm Tristan Riddell.
And I'm Matt Hansen.
And you're listening to the Nerd Party.
Talk nerdy to me.
Welcome to Nerd Party.
This is episode 36 of the Nerd Party. Thank you so much for listening. Thank you so much for downloading and subscribing and going to thenerdparty.com as well as going to facebook.com/thenerdparty. We really appreciate it. Today, we're talking about something a little bit more, dare I say, intimate, a little bit more personal, a little bit emotional. Matt, you and I are going to talk about what it was like to grow up as a nerd, and what it's like for many people growing up as nerds before it was fashionable. But before we get into it, we have some pretty exciting topics to talk about beforehand.
Yeah, we do, including one that I definitely want to talk about because it's something that I've been waiting for a while. I didn't think I was going to get it before Star Wars because I think all the nerd news and nerd hype right now is very much focused on that film coming out in 2 weeks. But fortunately, Disney, who owns both Marvel and Star Wars, saw it fit to have a very surprise release of the new trailer for Captain America Civil War, which is coming out in May of 2016. Robert Downey Jr. and Chris Evans went on the Jimmy Kimmel Show on Tuesday, the 24th of November, and debuted both the trailer and the poster for the film.
With that, it was pandemonium when it was released. There was so many great reactions from the fans where, it gave us exactly what we wanted it to give us. We wanted crazy action. We wanted really intense emotion. We wanted some spectacular visuals. And we wanted to know that this was going to be a Captain America movie.
It didn't give us people everything they wanted, but those are the people that thought that Spider-Man would be in this first trailer.
Why on earth would people think that? Why would people think that Spider-Man's going to be in the trailer?
The same reason people think that the CGI in a first trailer is what it's going to look like on the big screen.
Oh my gosh. People just don't understand. Like they have said that Spidey's going to be in the movie, but not that much.
And why would you?
And why would you yeah. blow it away? Like why? Like I'm hoping that this is going to be a huge surprise. Like how he looks, and when he comes in, and where he comes in, and how he interacts with everyone. I want to be surprised about that.
Well, I mean, look what happened this last year. They held back on Vision. In fact, you didn't even really get to see what Vision would look like. You just saw his eyes in the last Age of Ultron trailer that came out before the film.
Right.
So it's going to be very much the same. I have no doubt.
And I'm sure it's going to be awesome. And to those people, just calm the hell down. But I'd have to say, like, for those of you, like, please watch this trailer before you listen to this, because we're not going to go by a frame-by-frame breakdown, but we're going to talk about generalities, and it's just about 2.5 minutes. My parents were over the weekend to visit after Thanksgiving, and one thing that we always do when they come up to visit or when I go down and visit them is they never see what's coming out. Like, they're not online. You know, like they don't have social media or anything like that. And they pretty much just watch Netflix instead of TV. And so they have no idea what trailers, like what movies are coming out or what the trailers look like. So I always sit them down and say, these are the trailers you need to see. And one of the first ones was Civil War. And I showed them Civil War right after I showed them Batman versus Superman. And my mom's like, why is everybody fighting?
Yeah, I mean, you do have two big versus movies coming up, but one of the things that the Civil War trailer I think did to distinguish it from Batman versus Superman is that the heroes are fighting each other, but it feels on a much like it's on a much more personal, almost smaller scale level for something that's being called Civil War. I mean, I think people expect with war in the title that it's going to be some huge thing, but I think it being on a small scale, it actually makes it better. And it makes it more intimate.
The parallels of betrayal or friend versus friend is pretty much where it begins and ends with the similarities between Batman versus Superman and Civil War. Because Batman versus Superman, they're not even friends yet. So that's not even in the same category.
I mean, I was going to say, Batman versus Superman, it's two unknowns fighting each other. I mean, the recognition comes from the meta knowledge of, you know, there have been there's been Superman for X many years, and there's been Batman for X many years, and
right.
several forms of entertainment, but these two iterations have never met and know nothing of each other, whereas Steve Rogers and Tony Stark and everyone else who's fighting against each other have not only known each other, but have worked together for years and are friends. So
now there's a moment in the trailer where Cap is talking to Tony, and Cap is presumably talking about Bucky, and he says, he's like, I'm really sorry, but you know, like I couldn't do this because he's my friend, or something along those lines. But the main point is that he said, he's my friend. And then there's this beat. We have a close up of Tony's face, and he says, so was I. And that's boom. That's right there. That's right where it hits you in the feels. And I noticed some backlash in this moment. I thought this was going to be a universally loved moment. And I did see a lot of positivity about it. But for some reason, there are some people who are like, no, you guys weren't friends.
Well, I mean, I think people, I get it's these same people who want Spider-Man in the first trailer. And I hate to insult people, but it's true. It's people who are incapable of picking up on subtlety. They need things spelled out for them, and they need it to be overt. If you watch the interaction between Captain America and Iron Man over the course of, you know, the two Avengers films, and it's mostly the two Avengers films, but you could see that their relationship has evolved for, if they're not buddy-buddy necessarily, they have a good working relationship, and they do, on some level, care about each other. So
yeah, not everybody has to be Kirk and Spock, you know, not everybody has to be, you know, bros in an internal bromance, you know, like it's, you know, they're comrades, they have respect for each other, you know, like Tony could have led the Avengers himself, but he chose not to and, you know, gave it to Cap. And he did that for a reason, because he respected him and he, you know, he knows that, you know, like he knows what he's doing. And there, you can't have that without some sort of base level friendship.
Right. You know what? I want to talk about a couple things that kind of surprised me in this trailer, but ultimately pleased me. One thing that didn't surprise me, and one thing that I was hoping that this trailer would do, and it did, is that I think it effectively convinces people that this is indeed Captain America 3 and not Avengers 2.5. There are other Avengers in this movie, but I think this trailer did a very good job of showing that this is still Cap's sequel. What do you think?
Yes, very much so. Like I said at the top of the show, that's one thing that they definitely established. And you know, you and I kind of went back and forth beforehand, and I didn't think that they were gonna go far away with it. I was just hoping that they wouldn't. But I, you know, the Russo brothers knew that this is not going to be, you know, a Tony Stark movie, that this is not going to be Iron Man 4, that the audience wanted Captain America 3 with just a little bit of Iron Man. And they went out of their way in the trailer to show you this is more about Cap dealing with Bucky and dealing with Iron Man than it is Cap and Iron Man, or just Iron Man.
That's the thing that did surprise me, but pleasantly so. The only... I don't want to say it was worry, but concern that I might have had when they first announced Civil War and what they were doing with the storyline is, you know, The Winter Soldier was a fantastic movie, and it set up this arc between, you know, Steve and Bucky trying to regain his memories. That's what the last post-credit scene, if you remember, of Winter Soldier was telling us, is that he goes back to his memorial at the Captain America Museum and starts to remember who he was. And so, you know, my only concern was, are we going to have to put that story on hold because of this Civil War storyline? And instead what they did, and I think it's brilliant, is they're weaving the Winter Soldier into this Civil War storyline and making him a focal point, which I should have known that's what they were going to do, but I just didn't think of it. But since they are doing it, I think that's a great way to achieve both goals.
And it sounds like from the Russo brothers, it sounds like they're using Winter Soldier, you know, the literal Winter Soldier as in Bucky, to kind of push forward the Civil War storyline and integrate the Civil War storyline into the cinematic universe, because the Civil War storyline as it stands in the comics does not match or integrate well into the cinematic universe because, you know, it's all about unmasking.
Secret identities, yeah. And so far... Our only secret identity in this MCU is going to be Spider-Man at this point, because I don't think he's a known quantity yet.
which I'm really excited about because you've heard me talk about several times that Spider-Man plays a key figure in the Civil War storyline in the comic books.
Yeah, but I don't know if he's going to play the same key figure here.
It's not possible for him. It's not possible for him to play the same kind of key figure, but I think it could be cool to see what kind of figure he plays.
Yeah, but I think that key figure that he's playing is going to be filled by another character who he actually did get a glimpse of in this trailer, and that's Black Panther.
Black Panther, I was so pleasantly surprised to see how badass he looks on screen because, you know, you can never judge anything by paparazzi shots. It just doesn't work. You can't, like, so many things have been quote-unquote spoiled for us because of paparazzi shots and, like, how people look in their makeup or how people look in their outfits and because they're dangling from wires and there's green screen all around them. It just, everybody's like, oh, man, the suit looks stupid or this guy looks ridiculous. No, you have to wait until you can see the trailer when it's professionally lit. We got a little, you know, like, the colors retouched just a little bit. And this did not disappoint. I am super excited about an African superhero, and he looks like he kicks some major ass.
Well, he's able to, you know, get a kick into the Winter Soldier, and that split second moment of him running over the tops of cars is fantastic. I'm glad you liked it because there, you know, of course, there's a cadre of idiots out there who are, because it's not comic book accurate, they're saying he looks like the Black Power Ranger, which, you know, get a life.
What? No, he does not. Oh my gosh, does he not look like the Black Power Ranger? Good Lord, people, no. I don't exactly know what he looks like. It's just one hag of a suit. I love the lines. They say that they're going, like, he's going to glow a little bit, and they're going to enhance it in post. And I love the iconography around his neck and his arms, like in the comic book. And he just looks badass. If anything, he looks like closer to like a mix between Spider-Man and Batman.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think he looks great to bring that suit into a realistic context. And then the other thing I really like too is that one of the criticisms that I've heard people lobby at Age of Ultron this past summer is that it feels like it's this sidestep story to where Civil War is going. What I like that the trailer showed is that actually this registration, these accords that come up, are a result of, I'm guessing, what happens at the beginning of this movie, because at the beginning of this trailer there's some huge explosion. And I'm sure the Avengers are going to somehow be implicated in that. But mm-hmm. It's also a direct result. If you look at the papers that the Accords are written on, they're actually called the Sokovia Accords. And Sokovia being the country that Quicksilver and Scarlet Witch were from, that Ultron ended up destroying.
Right. Yeah, it ties it all together. I mean, the Russo brothers are smart. They understand that we're in a shared cinematic universe, and not everything has to be a direct continuation. You can tell your own stories, but it's nice to have, you know, a little methodology and little influences like that. You know, they could have called it anything that they wanted. They could have called it the Registration Act, or, you know, or anything like it was in the comic books. But what they did was they chose to take a thread from another movie that was incredibly important, that was started building in Age of Ultron, and then continued it on, but yet they're doing their own story. It doesn't have to be Avengers 2.5. It doesn't have to be Avengers 3. It can just be something that's within the same world. And that's what I really like about this.
Right, and people are speculating why Tony, who's been very, very anti-government this whole time, would suddenly submit to authority. But I have a feeling that the Russos are smart, and it's going to have a lot to do with the fact that he was ultimately responsible for what Ultron did. And so having gone through that experience, it probably led to some sort of change of heart that I think we'll see played out in the film.
I think so. I think what we're going to see is something very, very, very emotional and personal. I think Tony's going to see firsthand the result of his actions. I mean, in the comic books, there was a massive explosion that killed lots of people. You know, there was a mother that ran up to Tony after the fact. And I can't remember if she spat on him or slapped him or something like that, or said, like, this is your fault. How dare you? You know, my son is dead because of you. And I think something to that effect is gonna happen. I'm not saying exactly, because obviously I don't know. I didn't film it. But I think something to that effect is going to happen where we see that turn. You know, we see the wheels working in his brain where he's like, yeah, it's all coming together.
And what I think is so interesting, and I think you have this pulled up, and we'll get off the trailer right now, but, you know, a lot's happened. But you have there was an interview with the Russos shortly after the trailer came out where they commented on a few things that were in the trailer. And I think one of the most fascinating things that come up is toward the end when they're talking about the two different ideologies. I think that, you know, Captain America is going to be our protagonist, obviously, because this is his movie. But what I think that's very interesting is what they're saying is that no one really walks away being right or wrong in this conflict. It's not about there's a good side and a bad side. It's that there's conflicting ideologies.
Mm-hmm. And I really appreciate that, because that's what you and I said from the beginning, that that's what we wanted. We didn't want Iron Man to be, you know, this clear, you know, antagonist who twirls his mustache, you know, this bad guy. We wanted to walk out with shades of gray.
No, and as a matter of fact, when he gives that line in the trailer, that the "so was I" line, I mean, it is Cap's movie and Captain America is my favorite Avenger, but you can't help but feel sorry for Tony in that moment.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. Because I want to understand both sides, because that makes it more real and also more emotional and more believable. Because I hate it in movies, and you see this all the time, mainly in romantic comedies, where, you know, like at the beginning, you know, the girl and the boy, they meet and they flirt and they fall in love, but she's like, oh, I can't, I have a boyfriend. And then we meet the boyfriend and he's the biggest jackass in the world. You know, like he's horrible to everybody, and there's no reason why this amazing girl would ever be with this jackass of a guy. And the whole audience is screaming, "Oh, just go to the new guy. He's awesome. He's cute. He's an architect." But like, you know, and there's no drama in that. Obviously, it's a romantic comedy, so I understand the difference. But you see what I'm saying? Is like, when you have two ideologies that are both have value, it makes the audience think, and it makes the audience invested instead of just going, "Oh, that's Darth Vader. Boo, boo. He's the bad guy." You know?
Yeah, I think that you know, I wouldn't be surprised if audiences come out, or even go in and come out very split on which side they land on. And I think that's smart. I think that's going to give people something to talk about next summer versus, you know, just your regular MCU action film. I felt that, mm-hmm. and I think that's what the Russos do very well. They made a Captain America movie into a political conspiracy thriller last time, and here they're making it into a war movie, but not a war movie where it's about, you know, good versus evil. It's about two conflicting ideologies, which I think is going to be very fascinating. And I love how you can tell from the trailer that the Russos are back. And as much as I love what Joss Whedon did with both of his Avengers films, the direction that the Russos take with their camera work and with how they have these, I don't know how to describe them, the Winter Soldier and from what this trailer looks like, the way they shoot action is much more kinetic. It feels much mm-hmm. more like it is a war movie. Like it's shot, the action is kind of shot the way that something like Saving Private Ryan is shot. I don't know how to describe but
something that's not a superhero film,
right? And so you can instantly feel that they're back. I think that if this turns out well, I'm very much looking forward to what they're going to do with their Avengers films. And I just like to note that I was right when we were initially doing our speculation. Scarlet Witch is with Cap.
Yes, you were right. Scarlet Witch is with Cap. The trailer confirmed it. I'm with what you said earlier, I'm glad that you mentioned that, and I'm glad that you can actually recognize that, because there are movies in, you know, the Marvel Universe that is just kind of your, like, we've gotten used to this kind of movie where, you know, we go and see Ant-Man, and we're like, oh, okay, that was a Marvel movie. We see Guardians of the Galaxy, oh, that was a Marvel movie. We see Thor 2, we're like, oh, okay, that's a Marvel movie. But when we all saw Winter Soldier, all of us did a collective, that was different.
Well, we all said that was a Marvel movie, but instead of having a period at the end of it, we had a question mark. That was a Marvel movie? Question, not statement.
Yes, yes, 100%. That like, even, you know, my wife, who is not a Marvel fan whatsoever, she's DC all the way, more so than I am. And she, the only, like, I make her watch all these more Marvel movies, and she's like, every single time, she's like, eh. After she saw Winter Soldier, she's like, yeah, okay, that was good. And so she's excited about Civil War as well.
So, very excited, very interested to see what happens in the next, gosh, it's going to be 5 months at this point, because we're coming up on December. But, mm-hmm. yeah, thank you for letting me wax nostalgic about this trailer.
No, I wanted to as well. I mean, we spent 20 minutes on it. I wanted to talk about Civil War as well. I'm excited.
It's my number one most anticipated movie next year, so of course I'm going to go on about it.
I just rewatched the trailers for Batman vs. Superman and Suicide Squad, and I know that you and I were talking about, like, it's your number one movie for next year. I still think I'm going to have to put those two movies above Civil War.
Well, yeah.
I think I'm going to have to.
I'd be surprised if you didn't.
So we should probably move on. Let's move on to our next subject and our next topic. And as I talked about at the beginning of the show, this topic is, you know, for so many people listening to this podcast, there was a time when, you know, being nerdy, being geek wasn't chic. It wasn't in vogue. It wasn't popular. There was a time when just because you said you liked science fiction or because you liked science, you would be ridiculed, sometimes beaten, and just for being like that was different for some reason. You'd be like, nerd was an insult. Like, now you can say, like, oh man, I'm such a nerd, you know. And but now, like, but back then it was, you know, you're a nerd and you should be ashamed of yourself.
Yeah, you post millennial generations are going to have it so much more easier than we did.
and you know Matt, you and I, we're relatively young. And yet we can remember a time when it friggin' sucked to be a nerd. And before we get into this, I just want to take I want to make a statement at the beginning of this segment that I am a white Christian heterosexual male, and I understand that you can't even really hurt my feelings. Okay, I understand how much privilege I live with on a daily basis. I really do. And so when I go back and talk about, you know, what it's like to be discriminated against because I was a nerd or because I like Star Trek or stuff like that, I am by no means comparing this to real discrimination.
No, of course not. And I would hope that our audience wouldn't think otherwise. But yeah, we're just talking about it from the, you know, the uncool nerd point of view, understanding that in comparison, we probably had things much easier. But
yes. I just wanted to say that at the beginning.
We can only speak from our perspectives. We wouldn't presume to speak from anyone else's.
Exactly. Thank you. Thank you very much. So with that in mind, Matt, you know, we like to keep it positive here on the Nerd Party. We want to keep it positive, but we, in order to stay positive, you have to, you know, mention some negatives. And so let's talk about what was it like, you know, growing up a nerd? You know, like, did you have any negative interactions before you went to school, or do you think it all started with social interaction, like, from kindergarten on?
It had to start with social interaction, because I think that, at least for me, you don't realize that something, well, I think this is for anybody, but you don't realize something's cool or uncool until you have other people to compare yourself to. I mean, mm-hmm. when I was watching my first episodes of Next Generation when I was in kindergarten, I was just starting to go interact with other kids. So to me, I was doing nothing particularly taboo or uncool. In fact, I thought, you know, me watching this adult show, you know, to a five-year-old, that makes me cooler, right? Because I'm watching something grown-ups like.
Right.
But, you know, you open your mouth at school and then all of a sudden you learn something very different quite quickly. But no, I don't think you have any sort of basis for comparison until you start talking with other people.
Well, I mainly meant, like, you know, because some people see it even before they go to school in kindergarten, where they see it with, like, neighborhood kids or things like that. I didn't grow up with that many neighborhood kids, and so I didn't really start to feel it until later in elementary school.
I didn't either, and what's interesting about my story is by the time when I went to start going to kindergarten, I wasn't even living in this country. So I had it from a whole different perspective. I was living in Panama at the time, which was still American occupied, and I went to school on American military bases, so it felt very much like I was going to a normal elementary school, but, you know, I was kind of removed from the typical American suburbia that a lot of kids grew up when we were growing up in. But I feel like a lot of my experiences were the same, and I was only there for kindergarten and first grade when I attended second grade onward in the U.S., so I pretty much had the same experience that everyone else did.
Now, with me, it was it wasn't anything absolutely crazy. Like, it was nothing that you'd have to write home about. You know, like, I never, you know, I was never you know, I got into fist fights and was had my ass handed to me for completely different reasons. But it was never really because I liked a show, but I was ostracized certain times and I was made fun of, poked fun of, you know, like ridiculed and, you know, and separated and made apart because I was just unabashed about it from day one. Like, I never hid anything that I liked.
See, and I did. I was the total opposite. Even up to high school, because even when by the time I was in high school, nerd hadn't really come back into the forefront. That wasn't really until, from my perspective, that wasn't really until like the late latter half of the 2000s where it came back into being chic. But I remember just in high school, I would take I still do. I read Star Trek novels because those are the only new things that come out frequently that is Star Trek. And I remember having reading them in downtime at class, but I would read them while putting it in a notebook and hiding the cover.
It's so funny that you say that. I don't mean funny as ha ha, but like funny, interesting, because you hear that story very often. I never did that, but that's a very common story that I've heard from other fellow nerds where they say that they just wanted to read sci-fi novels. They just wanted to read Star Trek novels and Star Wars novels or anything like that. But yet they would hide it like they're reading like 50 Shades of Grey on the train or something. You know, like they would wrap it in a cover so that no one could tell what they were reading because they didn't want. It's not because they were ashamed. It's because they didn't want to get made fun of.
Right. And, you know, I was very stereotypical in that way. I wish I had the courage that you went in with, but I just didn't. So.
It was, I don't know what it was, because I think my parents instilled this in me at a very young age, because I remember in first or second grade, I really wanted a Beauty and the Beast t-shirt. And my parents were like, are you sure you want this? I was like, yeah, I totally want this. Did you see that movie? That was freaking awesome. You know, like, I loved Beauty and the Beast. And so I wore that t-shirt to school and I got made fun of ruthlessly and I did not understand it. I was so confused. I was like, guys, what are you talking about? Have you seen this movie? And they're like, yeah. I was like, and you liked it? And they're like, yeah. I was like, then it's an awesome movie. They're like, yeah, but only girls wear that shirt. And I was just like, what does that matter? You know, and ever since then, no matter how much I got made fun of, I was just like, screw you. I'm going to read what I want. I'm going to watch what I want. And I'm going to talk about what I want. And somehow that helped give me an edge with certain people because I owned it. Mm-hmm. But of course, like everybody else, you know, there's still bullies out there. There's still jerks out there, and they didn't care whether you owned it or not, whether you walked with confidence or not. You're different. You're a loser because my dad beat up kids when he was my age too.
Right.
You know, that kind of bullcrap. Now, obviously, you know, we have the stupidity of people that is synonymous with almost every sect of elementary school and middle school and high school and everything like that. No matter who you are, you're going to go through crap like this. One thing that I'd love to find out is, did you have any positivity at a young age? Like, did you find any friends because of Star Trek? Did you find any friends because of your love of science fiction that maybe, you know, you were like brothers in arms, you know, going through the tribunal that is the education system?
I mean, every now and then I did. And then when you know, for me, it was like any port in a storm. Whenever I found someone who even necessarily didn't like Star Trek, but was just, you know, an outsider or liked things that were more niche. Those are the people that I gravitated to. And not so much in elementary school because, you know, you just don't find kids like that too often. But definitely more in middle school. And then by the time I got to high school, I mean, the one person I keep in contact with from high school is someone that I knew we bonded over Star Trek. It was a friendship born out of that, the love for that saga. So, you know, I found, you know, people here and there, but it was so thin spread that it was almost, it was a rarity. That's what I'm trying to say. What about you?
With me, I mean, like, kind of like you, you know, like it was spread out here and there. You'd find people who you were kind of friends with or acquaintances with, and they're like, oh yeah, you know, I like science fiction too. You know, you'd eat lunch together a couple of times, but you didn't really hang out that much. There was one individual though that I met in middle school in sixth grade. For those of you who don't know the American education system, it was around 12. Years of age, and there was one kid. His name was John Reed, Mm-hmm. And he was a little bit smaller for his age, and he also had a rare skin condition, and which was visible and kind of gave him just like a kind of a cracked appearance on his skin. And so he had it rough growing up. Like he was a fantastic individual, very warm, very funny, liked what he liked. But there was always those people who wanted to pick on him because he was a little bit smaller and make fun of him because of his skin condition, which really right. wasn't that bad. But he loved Star Trek. Surprise, surprise. And he absolutely loved Star Trek. And he read the novels. He designed ships. And so we immediately became friends, fast friends. We would hang out every day after school. We would watch Star Trek together. We'd write our own scripts together. We would design ships together. He had Starship Creator, the PC game that we would play together constantly. And he was just a fantastic individual. And I've been kind of like, I've been internet searching for him here and there ever since, because he moved away. He moved to Indiana. And I have yet to be able to find him. I haven't found him on Twitter. I haven't found him on Facebook. So for some reason, people know a John Reed who matches the description that I just gave, who's heavily into Star Trek. You know, please reach out to contact@thenerdparty.com. I really want to find this guy and see how he's doing. But yeah, I had a friend like that. It was really only for a year or two, and then he moved, and it was really sad because I didn't really have anybody else who was hardcore into Star Trek. I had a friend who I've been friends with for over 20 years now, who's hardcore into Star Wars. But as we all know, being into Star Wars in high school and middle school was nowhere near as nerdy as being into Star Trek.
I would venture to say it never was nerdy. I mean, even when Star Wars came out, it wasn't met with the same level of skepticism or you know, taboo-ness that Star mm-hmm. Trek has always been associated with. Stigma. That was the word I was looking for, and
there
it escaped
go.
Me.
Yes. Stigma. I think that's entirely accurate. So that was really nice, having that outlet, having that friend, because before that, my only Star Trek outlet was myself. You know, playing with my action figures, playing with my, you know, like my Playmates bridge of the Enterprise D, you know, the one with the Romulan warbird on the view screen. And also my parents, you know, my parents are huge Star Trek fans and huge sci-fi fans.
That was the interesting thing for me growing up, is that when it came to some stuff like Star Trek, it wasn't with people my own age that I found you know, that sort of camaraderie with. It was mostly adults. I got on better with adults when I was a young kid than I did with people my own age. I don't know why that is. It just was. I mean, even to the point where I was in eighth grade when Nemesis came out in theaters, and mm-hmm. I didn't go see it with people my own age. I went with my mom's coworker who wanted to take me because she's a huge Star Trek fan. So I saw this thing with an adult coworker friend of my mother's. In the theater.
See, I bet you that's a common trait among Star Trek fans. I would love to know what people think in that arena, because I was the exact same way. Like, I could relate with adults on a much easier level than I could with children my own age. And I'm wondering if there are other sci-fi fans out there and Star Trek fans, because, you know, is it because we're well-read? Is it because we read
well,
constantly?
Well, honestly, you were exposed to Star Trek at a very early age than I was. I started watching Next Gen when I was 5, and that was after I saw Generations in the theater when I was 5. And I think that, you know, not to sound arrogant, not to make us seem better, but I think watching Star Trek at a young age makes you smarter. It certainly enhanced my vocabulary at a young age. I started learning words like similar and capable and all these sort of words that I hadn't been exposed to, but I knew what they meant by the time I was 6, you know?
Transinducers, yeah.
Well, not made up words, but, you know...
I'm just messing with you. I agree with you completely, is that we were able to attach to it because it had this sci-fi element that was fantastical, but yet at the same time, it was rooted in hard science. That's the big difference between Star Wars and Star Trek. Star Wars is fantasy, Star Trek is science fiction. Because of that, it intrigues us to follow up in other venues. Like, that's why you hear all about all these astronauts who were obsessed with Star Trek and then became engineers or became pilots or, you know, did this, did that, became mathematicians, because it was rooted in real science. And so when they talked about something on the screen that was too fantastical for real life, they figured out what the basis was and then explored that And that's why so many people in the sciences are Star Trek fans.
Well, yeah, I mean, it did a lot for learning science for me as a kid. But even, like I said, even more basically, Data was just a great vocabulary teacher when I was a kid, you know?
Absolutely, yeah.
So I think that it does make you smarter now, but it also leads to some ostracization. But it's so funny how that's turned around, at least in the past decade. Right.
That's where I wanted to go next. When do you think the switch happened? Because obviously it happened in our lifetime, because we're talking about this right now, where when we were young kids, it wasn't cool. And then all of a sudden right now it is cool. You know, when did that happen? Because it was well before JJ did his reboot. Voyager went off the air in 2004 and the reboot came out in 2009. I'm thinking it's somewhere around in there.
You said Voyager ended in 2005. It's actually Enterprise that ended in 2005.
Ah, okay. Sorry, I got my dates mixed up. Okay, so Enterprise ended in 2005, and JJ's reboot came out in 2009.
Yes.
Do you think it was somewhere around in there when it became acceptable?
You mean cool? In general or just for Star Trek?
In general. It doesn't matter. It doesn't have to be linked to Star Trek. I mean, it in general.
In general, I'm not exactly sure when it happened. For Star Trek, it was definitely JJ. For as much as people want to crap on those movies, it was definitely JJ and the time building up to that new movie where I started to hear the rhetoric on Star Trek turn around. And certainly when the movie came out and was as well received as it was, I just remember walking out of the theater the first time I saw that movie with my friends who loved Star Trek and one who didn't, and the ones who loved it and the ones who didn't loved the movie equally. And I turned to my friend who loved Star Trek as much as I did, and I told her, you know, I can't believe it, Star Trek is back in the mainstream. I never thought, you know, growing up in that time, I never thought I'd see the day, but here it was. As far as in general, I want to say it's when. And I'll give some credit to one of your favorite guys here. I want to say it was around 2008-ish when stuff like Iron Man and The Dark Knight, Christopher Nolan, when these movies mm-hmm. started coming out that would normally be more geek associated, but were attracting real A-level talent and being shown that, hey, these forms of entertainment aren't just for geeks. They could be made into really good pieces of film and television. And I think that went a long way in kind of turning the opinions around on a lot of people.
I think that's really smart. I think that's really apt. Yeah, because right around there is when MCU really started taking off and when Dark Knight started making billions of dollars. I think... one thing that I started reading online earlier when I was researching for this podcast is that one thing that kept coming up was Bill Gates' name. I find that very intriguing, because if you think about the personal computer revolution, that was all brought to us by geeks. That was brought to us by the nerds that were made fun of in high school, that were ostracized by the jocks. And because of these people who are now billionaires, mm-hmm. you know, like our lives are insanely better and easier because of what they invented, because of them being social outcasts.
It's true.
I think that's really interesting to think about.
Well, you know what? And here's another factor that I didn't even think of until you started mentioning technology, Tristan. What happened after 2005 and 2006 that kind of changed the landscape? Social media. I have a big feeling that it was social media that turned the rhetoric on nerd and geek around, because once you started having things like MySpace and then later Facebook and Twitter, when you had these previously, you know, we felt ostracized before, but we didn't have people to connect to. Once you introduce that element, even if you have people who are like us, you know, we live on almost opposite sides of the country. But once you introduce that social media aspect, you don't feel alone anymore. And what's more, when other people start seeing conversations between geeks about, you know, this show or that movie, you know, all of a sudden people are saying, hey, that sounds kind of cool. I'm going to check out that show or this movie. And, you know, really, mm-hmm. with social media and then with the availability of regular media like Netflix, streaming media, I think that's when that whole thing started to turn around. So it might have been a little bit earlier. It might have been 06, 07, and then in 08 with those movies, and going forward, mm-hmm. the process of making better art combined with social media, I think, turned it around. I think that's what's mostly responsible.
Well, when 2004 came around and Facebook was invented, and soon after that, the world shrank considerably. And because of the world is constantly shrinking, and when the Facebook.com came out, it connected people in a way that never happened before, you know, across boundaries, like you mentioned, like you and I. And any of you who are fans of To the Journey or of this podcast understand that I first went to social media after college to find that geek community, to find that nerd community, because I could not find it in my physical life.
And this is all the byproduct of that. I mean, if you like To the Journey or The Nerd Party or Delta Quadrant or Upper Pylon 2, those shows were created because of the existence of social media. If social media didn't exist, you and I would not be friends right now, or it's very unlikely that we would be friends.
We would not be friends. You and Char would not be friends. I and Char would not be friends. I would not be a part of Trek.fm. You would have been a part of
Trekmate.
And it's like I've had such enriched experiences because of social media, because not just solely because of social media, but because social media has introduced me to amazing people who've given me the sense of community. And so I really kind of want to end this podcast right now saying, yeah, I mean, like, I think we, you know, we saw it with the, you know, once we're in the new century and personal computing got faster and faster, and then we have social media, and then we see the effects of that in our pop culture with Iron Man and Batman and, you know, like The Dark Knight and everything like that, where like it really started to happen in the 2005-2006 range and then was solidified a couple of years later with a superhero movie making billions of dollars.
Right. And that I really think that that changes experiences for everybody going forward. And with that, before we bring this to a close, Tristan, I kind of want to talk about the present time and the future and what geekdom should do going forward. And what I mean by that is, ever since that switch happened and, you know, our culture is back in the mainstream, the only downside to it, and I think it's something that we can combat, is that those of us who were geeks for a long time suddenly had this influx of new people who are interested in the things that we grew up with. Like Star Trek had a influx, these superhero films had influxes, and I'm kind of seeing, and to my sort of dismay, us, not you and I, but our community in general, becoming a lot like what we were bullied by in growing up, in the sense that we want to reject all these newcomers because we want to be all hipster and say that we liked it before it was cool, you know?
I like how you phrase that, because we want to be hipster. There's this weird shift where we were outside the mainstream and hated it, and then once we became mainstream, all we wanted to do was be different. And that's the definition of a hipster, is someone who tries to be different, is not different naturally.
I've always rejected that personally, but you know, it is happening in this community, which is, I think, is so unfortunate. And so what I want to implore to all of us in the community going forward is that, you know, you can have differing opinions on the way that mainstream culture is adapting the things that we love or the way people are responding to the things that we love. But the fact of the matter is, the things that we love would not be able to continue had it not had this influx.
We need to not be exclusionary. We need to not be angry towards somebody else because they don't have the same amount of knowledge as you, or we need to not be angry because they like the same thing that you like for a different reason or a different aspect of what you like. It is absolutely insane about how we insist on separating ourselves when our fandoms, our nerddom, our geekdom is all about community. That's what it boils down to, is about loving something so much that it brings other people together, and then when more and more people start to love it, we start to separate ourselves so that we can have our little groups again, and it's disgusting.
Yeah, we need to not be so cliquish, is what I'm trying to say, and you know, really, we need to set a better example than the way we were treated by those, you know, who shunned us and growing up in middle and high school. And we need to be a little bit more loving, we need to be a little bit more accepting of our new fans and stuff like that. So that's kind of what I would like to see going forward. And I'm hoping that would happen, but you know, the great positives of social media come with the great negatives of social media, and that's, you know, people being petty, and hopefully that tones down over the coming years.
I would thoroughly enjoy that, because, you know, hopefully people who listen to the Nerd Party get a sense of positivity and get a sense of, yeah, maybe I won't judge that person next time. Or, you know, like, you know, with what Matt and Tristan brought up with, you know, like, collect what you want with that episode, you know, weeks and weeks ago, you know, where we have our own bias and we have our own, you know, sense of what's different or what's wrong and what's right. But at the end of the day, if it's just people loving something, why can't we just let them love it and embrace them? And I feel like you said, we should be stewards as geeks. We are the ones who were ostracized. So let's not forget where we came from, and let's enjoy this time when we're in the mainstream, because it won't always be that way, so that we can make sure that no one has to feel ostracized again.
I mean, do you know what a great feeling it's like when, you know, the 09 movie comes out, and then my friends, some of whom have never seen Star Trek before, go to see that movie and love it, and then come to me and say, you know, I know you love Star Trek and I love this movie, where should I start? Or I had one girl come up to me and say, can I borrow your Next Generation DVDs?
It's a beautiful thing.
I love that, and I welcome that.
I welcome it too, because it gets people invigorated and interested to see what the past was like. Or it's a gateway to a much larger world, and we should be the stewards of that much larger world.
Good talk, Tristan. I really enjoyed this.
Good talk, Matt. I'm glad we were able to discuss Civil War, and I'm glad that we were able to talk about what it was like growing up as a nerd, and hopefully we have shined a light on what the future could be like. So please, please go to thenerdparty.com. You can find all of our previous episodes on there. You can find our blog, where we talk about certain things that are currently happening. You can also find out a little bit more about us. You can also contact us via the website, or you can email us at contact@thenerdparty.com, or you can find us on Twitter. You can find me at @TheInsaneRobin, or you can find Matt at @MHanson0207.
Thank you so much for listening to The Nerd Party. Please join us again next week. Until then, we will remain nerds and proud of it.
Coming up next week,
the Republic will be reorganized into the First Galactic Empire.
You underestimate my power.
That boy is our last hope.
No. There is another.
Join the revolution. Join the Nerd Party.